Yep, he's a political man. He's of the left, but he's leaning to the right. It sounds like Today, All Those Years Ago by Cream and Politician. The Cream's coming back sometime, I think, at the end of this month. Having a big concert for those Cream fans. I don't even know where it is. I'm so old. Hello, Mark Berkey-Girard. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Ah, that's great. This is Mark Berkey-Girard, who's the city government editor for the Gotham Gazette. The Gotham Gazette is one of the most important resources for New Yorkers in New York City. I mean, it's just a great resource. If you go on, it's an online resource. It's at www.GothamGazette, one word, just like you think it is, .com, GothamGazette.com. And Mark has been on the show before, and we've asked him to come on because of his astute analysis, continuous and endless astute analysis on Gotham Gazette. So how did the Democrats do yesterday?
You mean the Democratic voters themselves or the candidates?
Well, how did the candidates, how did the voters do? I know Ferrer has got like 39.9% of the vote, which means they'll be... They have to count all the paper ballots, and if he gets 40%, there won't be a runoff. If he doesn't get 40%, he'll have a runoff with Anthony Weiner.
Yes, this is probably for Fernando Ferrer, it's the worst news he probably could have received. You know, he would like to go ahead and start, spend the next 6 weeks campaigning against the mayor, not against another Democrat. And so, you know, under New York City law, the Democrat has to get at least 40% to avoid a runoff, and it's unclear at this point whether there will be a runoff. And Fernando Ferrer has about 39.95%, and Anthony Weiner, congressman from Brooklyn and Queens, has about 29%. So there's about 8,400 absentee ballots to still count, and they're also going to have to open the machines, just make sure they have all the numbers correct. But this could go on for a couple days, which is not good news for either of the Democrats. This is probably the best news for Michael Bloomberg.
Michael Bloomberg only seems to have good news these days. You know, I mean, he's spending $100 million on the campaign is what the estimates are. Does Weiner have a chance if there's a runoff?
You know, I think it's really early to say. A lot depends on turnout. A lot depends on where, you know, supporters for Fields or Miller, the other two candidates, major candidates, you know, where they go. But, you know, I guess one of the stories of yesterday was that the voter turnout was very low for Democrats. Only about 20% of registered Democrats in the city came to the polls. Which, you know, you could interpret many different ways, but one is that they're not very, you know, they weren't very excited about these candidates, or they weren't paying attention, or that some people, Democrats, are kind of just waiting for the general election and maybe voting for Bloomberg.
Well, it does seem that Democrats who outnumber Republicans in terms of registered voters 5-1. Mm-hmm. Have been successfully wooed by Bloomberg's money.
That's definitely a valid point. You know, he's spending $100 million. I don't know if you were watching, you know, election results last night. It seemed like to me like almost every other ad was a Michael Bloomberg ad, and he was also through a big victory party last night for himself, even though he didn't have a Republican primary because he knocked his challenger off the ballot. But for Republicans to hold the mayor's office for four consecutive terms would be something that would just be unthinkable in New York, you know, even a decade ago.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that Bloomberg, who's, you know, he has two issues, it seems to me. One is education, which can be reduced to testing. Mm-hmm. And the second one is this development of luxury housing, which is, as far as I can see, is very much like Bush's tax cuts for the rich. Mm-hmm. And New York City has become increasingly unaffordable. I'm an upper middle class person.
Right.
And I have to struggle. Right. I make a very good income and I have tremendous job security. I'm having trouble affording New York City, and I'm easily in the top 15 or more percent of wage earners in New York City.
Right. And that is one of the messages that the Democrats are trying to plug into. Fernando Ferrer, you know, is spending a lot of his time talking about affordable housing and the dropout rate, kind of pointing to two things that he feels are some of the biggest problems. Anthony Weiner is attacking this a little more, you know, with a different angle, saying he's going to give middle-class people, which he refers to as people who make under $150,000 a year, a 10% tax cut. So they are trying to go at this affordability thing a little bit. But it is kind of interesting when you talk about luxury housing. If, you know, the Democrats came out against the stadium, the West Side Stadium. But if you look at some of the other projects that are going on around the city, like the Brooklyn Atlantic Yards project, all of the Democrats supported that one as well.
Well, I live in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, and in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, every spare space of ground is going up for some kind of luxury housing.
Mm-hmm.
Parking lots, I have a parking lot across the street that was always believed was too narrow.
Right.
To build a house, and they're building this huge, very narrow, high house that's for, again, luxury housing that I couldn't afford.
Right.
Or if I did, I'd get skinny because I could only afford to eat popcorn and water
mm-hmm.
for supper. I mean, it's kind of shocking.
And the Democrats would argue that in that specific development that they fought hard to get more affordable housing into that. But, you know, the affordable housing always, or at least at this point with the Democrats and with Mayor Bloomberg, seems to come as a component of luxury development.
Right, right. And it's 30%. I grew up in a New York City where 95% of the housing was affordable.
Right.
I mean, I lived in Manhattan on 32nd Street with Edmund Leach. We were roommates and paid $80 a month on 32nd between 2nd and 1st.
And it, you know, in some ways it shows, I think, the power of real estate in the city. And, you know, the mayor's spending his own money, but the Democrats are looking for campaign contributions, and some of those are coming from real estate developers, definitely.
Well, what does Ferrer have to do if he even wants to have a chance of beating Bloomberg? What would you tell him if he came to you and says, Mark, how do I beat Bloomberg?
I'm not sure I would be the best one to give advice, but I think I think some of the themes he's trying to pick up, he's already doing. Last night in his speech, he was talking about people who can't afford their apartments, people who are working two jobs to make ends meet. You know, trying to appeal to people who aren't going to be living in that luxury, housing that they're building near you. I think the challenge he faces is obviously Mayor Bloomberg's money, the amount of television ads he will be running. They will just steadily increase, which is you know, anyone will tell you that is difficult to beat. I think, you know, another thing is that it seems that some New Yorkers believe that, you know, the city's not too bad off, that they, you know, they think the mayor's done an okay job on education. Maybe they don't like everything he's done, but he's trying to do something. People kind of point to the smoking ban as a popular Bloomberg thing. So, but I think Ferrer has to do more to kind of wake up New Yorkers, if he wants to win, who are happy with the status quo.
Now, changing the topic a little bit, incumbent Alan Jennings lost his city council race to his old nemesis, Thomas White, and that's a rare thing that an incumbent in the city council loses a race. It's true Alan Jennings had a lot of controversy around him.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any surprises yesterday? It seems to be a election which almost everything went the way the experts say it would go.
Yeah, I mean,
there was no surprises or very few.
In New York, incumbents win. That's a general rule, which is, you know, obviously another thing that the Democrats in the mayoral race, you know, are up against is against an incumbent. The only incumbent to lose, as you point out, was City Council Member Alan Jennings, who, you know, was charged with sexual harassment, who's had a number of, you know, episodes of unusual behavior, however you want to characterize them. But actually, he lost to a former City Council Member, Thomas White, who held this seat for 10 years and then was kicked out of office because of term limits. And the Democratic Party in Queens has tried to get Alan Jennings out in the past. They ran a candidate against him 2 years ago that he still beat. But this year, they went back to the, you know, now that he's been out for 4 years, Mr. White is eligible to run again, and they went back to the old incumbent, which is, so in some ways an incumbent lost, and in some ways an incumbent, you know, a former incumbent is now back. So I think there were some, you know, there weren't a lot of surprises there. In the city council seats, there were 7 open seats, again, due to term limits. And so we do have some new people that will be coming into the council there.
Just in terms of this show, one of our missions for Dina and I from the beginning of this show was to take the city council very seriously because we think it's a very democratic body and we're very pro-democratic here on this show. That's really our politics, is to be very pro-democratic. And we've lost some of our best progressive guests because of term limits.
Right.
We've lost Bill Perkins. We've lost Margarita Lopez. We've lost Gifford Miller. We've lost Eva Moskowitz, people that really came on the show fairly regularly, which was very nice of them. Who are the new progressives?
The new progressives, good question. I'm kind of trying to think of who, you know, there's a couple people who are going to be vying for to be the speaker of the city council. Gifford Miller, who's the city council speaker now and ran for mayor, is term limited out. So he has to leave in December. So a couple of the people who are running for that seat, one is Christine Quinn, council member from the West Village.
Another person has been on the show many, many times.
And she's been in the council for a while. Another is Bill de Blasio from Park Slope, Brooklyn. He's running for speaker. I think, you know, if you want to use the term progressive, those might be two of the people who are really going to be pushing the agenda, I think, in the next council.
Oh, that's interesting and good, and we'll have to have them on the show. And because obviously, who becomes the speaker of the city council is very important.
Yes, and you know the council is really, the speaker sets the agenda for the council, what kind of legislation they pass, what kind of stance they take with the mayor on the budget, you know, what kinds of things they choose to fight for in the budget versus, you know, things that they concede on is really set by the speaker. And so that'll, you know, that's actually one thing that will be, you know, going on in the next couple months is the speaker is elected from within the city council. So there's a lot of wrangling going on between the people who want to be that next speaker.
Now, one of the things we also did is we had many shows, since there were so many people running for borough president of Manhattan, and Scott Stringer won with about 26% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
He was already the winner with 26% of the vote, about 9:30 or something, I think. I saw them projected on Channel 1 yesterday. What kind of borough president will Scott Stringer be?
You know, it'll be interesting to see. I think first of all, the borough president doesn't have a lot of power when you think of kind of the main things in city government. You know, they can introduce legislation, but they don't really have a role in the budget, or they don't have a whole lot of money to allocate. One of the things that they do have power over is pointing people to the community boards, and they have a say in zoning, which is an arcane way of talking about what you're talking about in your neighborhood. What kind of housing is built? What kind of buildings are built? Is it a manufacturing district? Is it a residential district? So I think, you know, Stringer will have a role to play in that, you know, and probably, you know, in development that happens on the West Side and other places in Manhattan. That is one place he can play a role. You know, he has a record in the assembly, and he's touted himself, you know, as kind of as a reformer up in Albany. So it'll be interesting to see what he does in the city.
Now, Betsy Gottbaum was reelected as the public advocate over Norm Siegel.
Mm-hmm.
And Betsy's a very nice person. And at best, she did an adequate job as public advocate. Why was that enough? I mean, she really didn't do much, seems to me. I mean, maybe I'm being unfair, but she certainly did a lot less than Mark Green, who was the public advocate before her. Norm Siegel, who's an advocate and a lawyer, I almost feel like he should have just been given a chance because Betsy didn't do much.
Right.
Am I unfair?
Again, this is the public advocate is one of those positions that doesn't have a whole lot of power, and it's also a position that few New Yorkers actually, know what it is or who the public advocate is. In this year's race, there was a lot of debate about what this position should be. It was created out of, in the pre-term limits days, it was kind of a holdover position from the city council. Mark Green used it, as a bully pulpit against Rudy Giuliani, to try to raise different issues. Betsy Gottbaum has taken a very different approach. She sees it as an ombudsman to try to, a go-between, try to help people get the services they need. Norman Siegel argued that this should be a more aggressive position. There should be more litigation. There should be more high-profile criticism of the mayor coming out of it. But again, with a very small turnout, and an incumbent, it looks like she was able to pull those people out, the faithful, to get herself reelected.
Now, if just imagine for a second that Norm Siegel would have won this, and since he wanted to be a more active, public advocate,
mm-hmm.
Would he have been able to do that, or was that just so much talk?
I think he definitely could have used the position, to call press conferences to get more media attention. One of the things he talked about in the campaign was his work with the protesters who were arrested during the Republican National Convention. And so he has spent a lot of the last year working on the cases of those people, many of whom, were arrested with false charges or no charges whatsoever. And he was saying this is the kind of thing that the public advocate should do. I think that kind of message is hard maybe to get out to voters for a position that doesn't know much, that people don't know much about. Betsy Gottbaum only got 180,000 votes, which isn't a whole lot when you think of the whole city for the citywide position. It's very small.
Now, most of these positions are relatively uncontested outside of the mayor.
Yes. There's the general election. In many of these races, the election is effectively over. The challenge that Betsy Gottbaum will get from Republicans or other party candidates isn't going to be that formidable.
Is there actually somebody running against her, or is there somebody running against Scott Stringer for borough president on the Republican line?
Yes, they are. How much money and how much effort they're going to put in is yet to be seen. But, the one race where, at least in the recent history, where New Yorkers have gone against that 5-1 Democrat is the mayor. But the rest of the races, the primary is usually is where the decision's made. So it is kind of it's a shame that fewer people were involved in that process yesterday of ultimately electing who will be in office. So.
Well, thank you very much, Mark Berkey-Girod, city government editor for the Gotham Gazette, www.gothamgazette.com. Great, great site. I thank you. I use the site all the time. Citizens Union, which you're part of, does a great job. And hopefully I'll talk to you again about these issues.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is WBAI 99.5 FM. And next week, Dina and I will be on again. We hope that you tune in. And goodbye. No Louis Armstrong today. Bye-bye.